If you are buying an AI coding tool based solely on, how smart its underlying model is, you are essentially getting scammed. It is like buying a shiny V12 engine sitting inside a car with no steering wheel, no suspension, and absolutely no tires.
Yeah, and yet that is the exact trap the entire software industry is falling into right now. I mean, we are just totally hypnotized by the engine specs. We look at these benchmark scores and logic tests, and we completely ignore the chassis.
Right. Well, welcome to the deep dive. Today, our mission is to break that hypnosis for you. We have a phenomenal piece of analysis to work through titled, "The Model Isn't the Product, the Harness Is."
It really is a fascinating piece.
It is. The author did something incredible here. They took a fine-tooth comb to a publicly posted source snapshot of Claude Code, and then they cross-referenced that with essays from OpenAI about their Codex model.
And what they found fundamentally shifts the paradigm. We're going to prove to you why the AI model, the brain everyone is so obsessed with, is really merely one small component of the actual product.
To really appreciate this shift, though, we first have to ask why we are all so easily fooled by that brain in the first place. Like, why is the illusion so convincing?
Well, I think you have to think about the very first time you ever used a coding agent.
Oh, sure. You paste in a prompt, you give it access to a couple of files, and you just watch it work.
Exactly.
And it feels like absolute magic. In a 5-minute window, it reads your code, proposes a fix, runs a test, and explains what it did. I remember doing that and just thinking, well, my job is gone. The model is a genius.
Right. But that 5-minute window is what we call a toy session. I mean, it is highly impressive, but it's effectively just a linear script.
A linear script.
Yeah. The human gives the model a list of tools, the model calls a tool, and then the system prints the result. It gives this illusion of competence because you are operating in a perfectly sterile environment.
Okay, but I've seen these models write entire Python scripts flawlessly in one go. So if they are that smart, why can't I just leave my laptop open for 5 hours, tell it to refactor an entire backend database, and, go get lunch? Like, where does it actually break down?
It breaks down the absolute second you introduce real-world variables, which is, of course, inevitable in a 5-hour session.
Right.
The transition from 5 minutes to 5 hours shifts the entire focus from the model's sheer intelligence to its bare survival. The author of our source material calls these the boring questions. But they are the questions that crash right through the wall of that sterile demo environment.
Those boring questions actually sound terrifying. If you are a developer who is trusting this system with your production code, give me an example of what happens when we hit that wall.
We'll start with context limits. An agent reading and modifying an entire code base will fill its memory limit very quickly. It just loses the plot. Then you have network instability. What happens when a WebSocket connection drops halfway through a critical tool call?
Oh man, that is a nightmare. Say I am on hotel Wi-Fi, the connection blips for just 3 seconds, and the AI was right in the middle of writing a massive update to a database schema.
Yep.
If the system just panics, my file is half written and totally corrupted.
Precisely the problem. Or consider user approvals. What happens when the agent wants to delete a deprecated directory, but you are not at your laptop?
It can't just proceed.
Exactly. The system needs to pause the AI, push an approval notification to another client surface entirely, like, say, your phone, wait for your input, and then seamlessly wait the agent back up.
See, I always just assumed the AI was sitting there waiting for me. But you're saying the system has to actively manage that pause.
Yes, and it gets even more complex. Think about what happens to a child worker.
A child worker?
Yeah, say the main agent spawns a sub-agent to go research a third-party API documentation page. If the parent session unexpectedly dies, you now have this zombie process draining tokens in the background endlessly just because it doesn't know its parent is gone.
So going back to the analogy, the engine is revving beautifully, but because we hit a pothole, the suspension snapped, the steering wheel came off in my hands, and the car is just careening off a cliff.
That is exactly where actual enterprise software products are made or broken. They are not made on the benchmark leaderboards where models compete on riddles and logic puzzles. They're made in what we call the harness.
The harness. So the author grounds this concept by looking back at OpenAI's engineering essays, so specifically around the Codex model. And the big revelation there wasn't about the model getting smarter.
No, it was about the engineering focus moving outward. OpenAI realized that tweaking the neural network had diminishing returns for actual usability.
Right.
They had to stop tinkering with the brain and start meticulously designing the environment around it. Mm-hmm. The harness is the runtime infrastructure. It consists of threads, discrete items of work, event notifications, reconnectable sessions, and incredibly strict protocol boundaries between the user interface and the core runtime.
That all sounds great in theory, but when the author looked under the hood of that publicly posted Claude code snapshot, what was actually taking up all that code base space? Because I think a lot of people, you know, they assume these AI companies just have a highly guarded magical paragraph of text, like a secret system prompt that tells the AI to be a 10x developer. And that is the whole secret sauce.
Oh, the audit completely destroys that myth. The most impressive part of the repository wasn't a clever prompt or a hidden Python function that makes the AI smarter.
Right.
It was the staggering, massive volume of engineering dedicated strictly to keeping long-running agent work alive. I mean, it's heavy-duty plumbing.
I really want to dig into the actual mechanisms they found because the sheer scale of the engineering is wild. Let's start with context compaction. When I read that, my first thought was just summarization. Like, if the chat gets too long, a secondary AI just reads it and says, okay, we talked about databases, and feeds that back in. But it is much more than that, isn't it?
Oh, much more. Because if you only summarize the text of a conversation, the AI forgets what tools it was holding and how they were configured.
I see.
The context compaction in this harness has to preserve the actual state of the machine. It saves the task state, the plan attachments, the skill state, and what they call tool deltas.
Tool delta. So it is remembering the exact modifications made to a tool midway through a job.
Yes. Imagine the agent is using a search tool, and halfway through the session, it modified that tool to only filter for files created in the last 48 hours.
Okay.
If the system just summarizes the chat text to save memory, the agent loses that specific tool configuration. A tool delta explicitly saves that modification.
Yeah.
This isn't a chatbot feature. This is an operating system memory manager.
But that makes total sense. Like, if I close my laptop, I don't just want a summary of my open tabs. I want the tabs exactly where I left them with the text I typed still sitting in the search boxes.
Exactly.
What else did they find? They mentioned sidechain transcripts.
Right. So a standard chatbot just appends every single word and error to one long continuous text file. But in a multi-hour coding session, an AI might hit a bug, panic, and spam the same error code 200 times in a row.
Which would just flood the chat.
Yes. And if all of that goes into the main transcript, it poisons the AI's working memory. It literally pushes the important instructions right out of its context window.
So the sidechain transcript acts as a filter.
It acts as an explicit source of truth that is optimized for correctness, not just raw analytics. The harness code actively suppresses duplicate control responses. It intercepts that spam loop, hides it from the main model's primary memory, and keeps the AI's workspace clean and valid.
I love the idea of the environment protecting the AI from its own panic attacks. It's brilliant. And then there are the background observer agents. I always imagine an AI was just doing one thing at a time, moving sequentially. What are these background agents actually doing while the main model is typing?
Think of it like a highly efficient construction site. The main worker, the primary model, is down in the trench, deep in the weeds of a specific Python file, hyper-focused on fixing a single function.
Okay.
If it stays down there too long, it forgets the overall blueprint of the building.
It loses the forest for the tree.
Exactly. So the harness deploys these background observer agents. These are parallel processes that hover above the trench. They continuously monitor what the main worker is doing. They update the master project checklist, and they maintain the overarching memory.
Wow.
So when the main worker finally finishes that Python file and climbs out of the trench, the observer agent hands the updated blueprint and says, here is exactly where we are in the grand scheme of the project.
That is incredible. It is like a silent project manager working in parallel. But let's go back to my hotel Wi-Fi nightmare for a second. The connection drops. The author mentions replay after reconnect logic and dealing with sequence numbers across transport swaps. That sounds incredibly dense. Can you unpack how that actually saves my corrupted database schema?
Sure, let's use an analogy. Imagine you and I are reading the exact same book, and we are connected over a phone call. I am dictating edits for you to make in your copy. If the call drops, we obviously don't want to start over from page one when I call you back.
No, we want to start exactly from the word we got cut off on.
Right. So to do that, we need a system. Before every sentence I dictate, I give you a sequence number. Mm. I say edit 42, page 10, line 3. If the call drops at edit 45, when we reconnect, the harness checks your last confirmed sequence number.
Ah, so it knows I only successfully received up to edit 44.
Yes. The transport swap is just the system moving from a dropped WebSocket to a backup polling connection. The harness seamlessly replays edit 45 onward. And the crucial part here is that the main AI model never even knows the call dropped.
Really?
Really. The harness handles the entire reconnection and sequence verification independently, allowing the AI to just keep reasoning.
And this is all running alongside token refresh cycles, worker identity management, environment re-registration. The author even found work item heartbeats, literally a heartbeat monitor to check if a spawned AI task has died in the background.
Which proves the overarching point perfectly.
Uh-huh.
The answer in this repository is never, ever hope the model figures it out. The answer is explicit, heavy-duty runtime machinery.
This brings up something fundamental about how I interact with these tools. When I type a request into a coding agent and hit enter, I'm assuming it's a simple loop. I send a query to the server, the model thinks about it, and it sends an answer back.
Right.
But based on everything we just discussed, that can't be how it actually works inside this massive environment.
Well, you are hitting on the absolute core paradigm shift here. It completely breaks the request in, answer out mental model. The main query loop in this snapshot is actually a highly complex state machine.
Okay, state machine. We throw that term around in tech a lot, but what does it actually mean in the context of an AI agent?
Think of a standard washing machine. It doesn't just take a command and spit out clean clothes instantly. It moves through specific defined phases or states. It fills with water, then it transitions to the wash state, then it drains, then it rinses, then it spins.
Okay, I follow.
It only moves to the next state when specific internal conditions are met.
And if the water pressure drops during the fill state, it doesn't just randomly start spinning dry clothes. It waits.
The query loop in this AI harness operates the exact same way. It isn't just generating text. It's constantly mutating its own internal state. It transitions into a tool execution state. If a tool fails, it transitions into an error recovery state, silently retrying the action without even bothering the user.
Wow.
It moves into a context compaction state when memory gets full. It schedules its own follow-ups. The model's text generation is really just one small input driving this massive turning gear system.
The author actually notes that this stateful query loop and recovery logic is so dense, they are dedicating a whole separate deep dive to it in part two of their series, which makes total sense because it fundamentally recategorizes what we are even looking at. We really have to stop thinking of agent products as AI apps with tools.
Yeah, like a chat window with a calculator attached. That mental model is obsolete.
It is entirely obsolete. We have to start thinking of them as distributed systems that just happen to have a language model sitting in the middle. And distributed systems engineering is hardcore traditional back-end software architecture. It has nothing to do with writing clever prompts.
So if you are listening to this and you are trying to decide which AI tool to buy for your engineering team next week, or if you're trying to build one yourself, this completely rewrites your evaluation checklist. The core design questions have permanently changed. You should no longer be looking at a vendor and asking, how smart is the frontier model you're using?
Because the model is just the engine on the showroom floor. Instead, I need to be asking, what specific environment have you built that makes this model useful for 6 hours instead of 6 minutes?
That is the only question that matters for enterprise adoption. If you're building a serious coding agent, your hardest bottlenecks are not going to be adding a new search tool or, you know, massaging the system prompt to be slightly more polite. Your absolute hardest problems are going to be preserving state across catastrophic network failures.
It's going to be deciding which background workers need to share memory and which ones need to be strictly isolated so they don't corrupt each other's context.
Exactly. It will be architecting cross-surface approvals so a user can authorize a deployment from their phone without breaking the agent's flow on the desktop. It will be stopping context growth from poisoning the session. And most importantly, exposing enough internal system state so that the agent can actually debug itself when it inevitably gets stuck.
That is all harness work. It is pure plumbing. And as the author astutely points out, it is the exact part of the process that every startup under budgets for, right up until the product hits real users and immediately disintegrates under the weight of the real world.
We can draw a very clean line here. The model, the AI brain, provides the reasoning. It gives you the intelligence to figure out what code to write. But the harness provides the usability, gives you the continuity.
One writes the script. The other survives the brutal, chaotic, unpredictable conditions under which real software is actually deployed. APIs fail. Wi-Fi drops. Users change their minds halfway through a job.
Yep.
The harness absorbs all of that chaos. That is the literal difference between a compelling 3-minute YouTube demo and a real product you can trust with your company's code base.
It forces us to respect the traditional software engineering that wraps the AI, rather than just worshiping the AI itself.
Which brings us to a final, slightly provocative thought for you to ponder today. It builds right on top of this revelation about the harness. If the real magic, the actual defensive moat of these products, is this complex distributed systems engineering, what happens to the AI industry when these harness architectures become standardized?
It is an inevitability.
Yeah.
Eventually, these incredibly complex state machines, the background observer patterns, the replay logic, it will all be open sourced and optimized by the global developer community.
And when that happens, if the complex environment is the true product, will the highly touted multi-billion dollar AI models in the middle eventually just become totally commoditized?
It's a huge question.
Will they just be cheap interchangeable engines that you hot swap into these incredibly valuable, meticulously engineered chassis?
It completely flips the value proposition of the entire tech sector. The companies building the best models might not be the ones who win. It will be the companies who build the best environments.
It really does turn everything upside down. So the next time you are dazzled by a seemingly magical AI demo online, don't just stare at the engine block. Check to see if it has a steering wheel, a suspension, and tires that can actually survive the road. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. We will catch you on the next one.